last year and a half has taught us anything, it's that humans want and need to connect. We're not-for-profit professionals supporting adults to live, work, and grow in a rapidly changing world. We need each other to build full plans and pathways for our clients so that they can achieve life-changing goals. Whoever and wherever you are, if you support adults in learning and life, the Getting Connected podcast may be for you. Grab a coffee, give us just a few minutes of your workday, and let's connect. Hey, listeners, I am Ashley Hoth Murray, and you are listening to the Getting Connected podcast. I'm joined by my co-host, the dazzling Gay Douglas. How you doing, Gay?
I'm doing wonderful, especially after that compliment. And how are you?
Good. Yeah, really good. Excited about today's topic. So have you ever read an article, book, or even a social media post that was so interesting that you were just bursting at the seams to share and discuss it with someone? We often think, especially as adults, that reading is a soul sport, something that we do on our own for a little bit of peace and quiet. But today we are going to talk about the peace and connection that reading can bring when done with small groups.
Yes, I've been looking forward to today as well. And it is my distinct pleasure to introduce Janine Agnew-Cata, who I have known for many, many years. I'm going to properly introduce her and then see how you are doing today, Janine. First of all, I wanted to set some context around the organization that Janine currently works for, which is the Literacy Network of Durham Region, fondly known as LINDER. Here in adult literacy world, literacy and basic skills, LBS, we do love our acronyms. So LINDER is the home of Janine Agnew-Cata. LINDER is one of 16 regional literacy networks. Ashley and my organization, we are the co-EDs at Literacy Link Niagara. We are a sister network to LINDER. So we have very similar mandates, although we all have different personalities in our networks. So a support and promoting literacy in the community of Durham Region is the main mandate of LINDER. They do service coordination, service planning, research and development, community and social development. Now, related directly to our conversation today about bibliotherapy, I find it fascinating that the network has also taken on a real focus on bibliotherapy, and we'll be talking more about what that means. And over, especially I'm sure, over this last number of months, almost years now, because bibliotherapy does have the benefit of breaking down barriers and addressing social isolation, Janine is going to be telling us about some of the fascinating research and delivery work that they have done in that regard. So before I say hello to Janine, I also wanted to properly introduce who she is. As I said, she's the ED, Executive Director of LINDER. More than 25 years in nonprofit management. She is, in addition to her role as a leader in the adult learning world in Durham Region, she is also a bibliotherapy facilitator and training. She has delivered programs to hundreds of participants and trained a number of different organizations in bibliotherapy. She's contributed to peer research in this regard and is a dedicated partner and advocate about this particular approach. In addition, and it's nice to hear that you have a number of different sides to personality, Janine. She's a hospice volunteer, and she's trained as a death doula. That might be an interesting conversation for another podcast. So Janine has a master's of education from the University of Toronto and the Institute for Studies in Education. So welcome, Janine. I know that's a long intro, but you deserve it. And I hope you're doing well today.
Oh, thank you so much, Gay. I'm delighted to be here, Gay and Ashley. I've been looking forward to this, and I've been a fan of your podcast since it started. So it's an honor to be here.
We got a fan.
Yay.
We got one fan. That's great. No, we're hearing great things. We're really enjoying doing this. It's such a nice approach versus some of the more traditional ways we learn. So I am going to start with a couple of questions here for you. First of all, I think number one question, would you please define and illustrate what bibliotherapy means and is all about?
For sure. So bibliotherapy is something that has been around for about 100 years in Western Europe and North America. It isn't a model that I invented. It's a model that I have been introduced to through some readings and through some collaboration with a bibliotherapy researcher in Toronto. It is basically a model. It's a very simple model. It's predicated on the idea that you can develop senses of connectedness and well-being through guided reading groups. So basically it is like a guided reading group. The type of bibliotherapy that I do is non-clinical. Certainly there's a long history and research background in the clinical use of bibliotherapy as an intervention for psychotherapy or psychiatry. And that's more based on, you know, kind of book therapy using texts and cognitive behavioral therapy. But what I've been doing and researching is called community level bibliotherapy or non-clinical. And basically those groups are, we pull together individuals and the facilitator will select a theme and then pull together topical readings. It's poetry, prose, sometimes music lyrics, could be fiction, nonfiction. It's like a mixed bag of reading material that is presented to participants in a live reading session. And then it gives them the opportunity to discuss the theme through conversation. So basically it's very simple. You know, I pick the theme, I pick the readings, I do the readings with the group, and then they respond. And through that, what we see is that people have their kind of mental, emotional, developmental, and social needs met. They can reflect on important themes that are meaningful to them, like hope or happiness or resilience. They can develop relationships with new peer groups, and they can also kind of work through some of their own, you know, for instance, anxieties during times of pandemic. So I'll give you sort of an example of what a typical session looks like. I've been working with a number of different groups throughout the pandemic. We've moved all of our delivery of bibliotherapy to an online model. Typically, I was doing this in person. But I work with different groups online. And, you know, on a typical week, I have an Ontario Works group that I meet with every week. And I will, you know, pre-select a theme. So, for instance, a theme on inclusion. And we'll select, I've selected materials for that particular presentation. So, you know, there's a lot of poetry on inclusion. There's some beautiful Indigenous poetry that is about inclusion and connecting with communities. There are some interesting nonfiction pieces, magazine articles. There's a couple of news articles, kind of op-eds that I've read about people with disabilities asking to be included. And I read each of these and then sort of put that out to the group to say, what do you think? Like, what resonates with you? Does this content mean something to you? Does it spark any ideas, memories, thoughts, reflections on the topic of inclusion? And those participants, and again, I'm talking about my OW participants in this situation, you know, they come back with some remarkable observations. They can reflect on their own sense of belonging. They will often discuss the fact that this particular topic may have all of a sudden sparked them to think about how they could outreach more to other people who are vulnerable in their community. And what I found is it's the same group of people coming back time and time again, right? They get really connected with one another because it's just this beautiful moment, an hour and a half, where you don't do any work, right? Like someone is doing the reading for you, either bringing you the poetry to reflect on, and all you are, you know, you're receptive to that experience. And we see some really beautiful things happening as a result of that. And namely amongst them are just people's reconnection with the importance of reading, the importance of poetry in our lives, which is something that in literacy, we don't always have an opportunity to talk about. We're so busy talking about the more clinical aspects of our work, the more, you know, right, concrete aspects.
And traditional.
But not that concept that reading is a joy and a pleasure and a reassurance, right, and a comfort. That's what we're trying to achieve through bibliotherapy.
And it sounds like, Janine, that it's also a safe place for people to share that information. And according to what you're saying, as the facilitator, they don't necessarily even have to have strong reading skills. They don't have to do the reading. They just do the listening and the reflection. Is that right?
Yeah, that's the beautiful thing about it. We started off delivering it in Durham Region with literacy learners. I worked with my one-to-one tutoring program, and we created a model where we were meeting just with people in a level one literacy program. So nobody in that group had really strong reading skills. What was absolutely mind-blowing, though, was the fact that we were able to take some complex poetry and read it and present it and discuss it and massage it and, you know, and present it in a way that was non-threatening. And the learners, even having no reading ability or limited reading ability, were able to respond to symbolic elements in the poetry. Mm-hmm. They were able to form opinions mm-hmm. about the world around them and express those in language related to the poetry. And we saw just an incredible uptake of interest in poetry amongst people who, you know, they were there for, you know, to enter apprenticeship or to go on to further education and training or employment, all those typical hard check boxes we see in literacy. Right. But it opened up this great opportunity for them to connect with one another and share. And, you know, what was so touching was many of them would jump in and go, we used a couple of song lyrics and, you know, people would jump in and go, I know this, I know the context of this song, this poem, this piece of writing, or I know something historical about what's being talked about. And they would share their knowledge, which in turn, you know, increased their level of confidence. Mm-hmm. And I was so touched by that, because in literacy, some of our learners come to us feeling like their knowledge isn't important, but right. bibliotherapy can spark off a discussion where they can share their intelligence and their knowledge and their experiences in an environment that makes them come away feeling imbued mm-hmm. with a sense of encouragement.
Janine, just correct me if I'm wrong, but what I hear is very cool about bibliotherapy is that it's very much in the moment. So you present something and reflection is done in that moment, where we often think in traditional education or even in our work that we read something, we, you know, we go through it, we pick it apart. It's not, you don't have that like intuitive reflection in the present. And I think that that's just such a powerful thing, and obviously leads to the connection of a group, because there's like a vulnerability to it.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, Ashley, because yes, that's absolutely the difference between bibliotherapy and say a book club is there is no preparation. I don't present the readings beforehand. This is not a quiz or a test or a, you know, it's not meant to be like a study group. What it's meant is to give people that in the moment first reflection opportunity. And like you said, that sense of openness and vulnerability is what forms social connections. I have a group that I work with. I work with many, many different types of groups, anywhere from a group of architects where I come in and do sessions for their PD, to literacy learners, to social assistance recipients, to just general library patrons. These are all ongoing right now. And that's what everybody says is really beneficial, is this concept of you just come and you go, this is just a safe place for me to just feel connected and inspired, right? Because it's that first reading where you get that, you know, phenomenal opportunity to have the best reflections. And the research that we've done, so I've worked with Ontario Tech University on a preliminary peer-reviewed research paper. That immediacy was one of the prime benefits that was noted by the participants that we focus grouped. So yeah, it's an important part of the process.
Very cool.
Very interesting. Yes, I can imagine what a break that might feel like in a day where people are responding digitally and have deadlines and are having to do 14 hours of prep for the meeting next week. To be able to just say, can I just sort of not connect with, just sit and connect with myself and with a beautiful piece of art and with the others in this room? I totally get that. So what makes it different? This is a great question. What makes it different than typical or other models of small group learning that we may be more familiar with?
So it's interesting because it's a bit of an odd fit with conventional literacy delivery. It is Again, it's related to guided reading, and certainly there are people who use guided reading in literacy programming at the lower levels. However, this is more of an informal or non-formal learning intervention in the sense that the learning outcome isn't, it's not up front. It's not front loaded in the delivery. My objective is not first and foremost to improve people's reading level. And that's why I'm doing this. What I think is an endemic part of the benefit. I think that people will improve their reading levels. And I think that they will improve their vocabularies and their familiarity with different types of texts. But I think the important role of this from an educational perspective is about confidence building. It's about connections. It's about building a sense of being invested in literature. And it's very informal, right? Like the learning is all done sort of through this intuitive interaction. And again, so that's a little bit of a difference than say a more practical module approach to learning. But I personally believe, and have always had the belief as a literacy professional, that literacy is about more than just the hard skills. It's also about an investment in your own pleasure in reading, right? That should be a democratic systemic right, that we should all have the right to enjoy literature, because literature is what pins together our culture and our experiences and our knowledge, right? Our societal knowledge. To exclude people from that makes them isolated. So for me, the real beneficial learning that takes place is the learning that poetry isn't a scary thing. And I mean, I think that is a practical aspect of the instructional side of things, is that I can reinforce again and again to people, poetry isn't about getting the whole thing the first time. It's about picking away at the edges. It's about appreciating a poem for the rhyme and the cadence and the sound or the words. You don't have to understand all of it. So again, I think the role of bibliotherapy in literacy delivery is about improving confidence, to encourage people to take risks with reading, knowing that they don't have to read and understand everything the first time they see it. And that's how I learned how to read. That's how I became an avid reader as a child, is I would be sent off my grandmother was living in downtown Hamilton. There was a bookstore nearby to get out of my parents' hair. They'd send me down to the local bookstore on James Street with $5 and tell me to go to the bookseller and get a book so that I'd stop bugging everyone. And I would buy books that, you know, way over my head, right? Like they weren't children's books or youth books. There wasn't a lot of, you know, young adult fiction available to me when I was a child growing up. I just bought whatever had a pretty cover. Yeah. And if I didn't understand all of it, everybody would just be like, that's fine. Just keep reading your book and don't bother us. And yeah. I think, you know, that's a lesson that I have carried forward in my own role as a sometimes literacy instructor and facilitator, is that there's a world of beautiful literature out there, and you don't have to get it all to appreciate or enjoy it. So to me, those are the things that sort of pin together how bibliotherapy is related to instruction.
That's a quick question. Is it all auditory? Like, or can, when you deliver bibliotherapy online, let's say, like, do you put the words up?
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
So it's both.
Yep. Yeah, it's both. So when I'm doing it online or in person, I present the readings in a hard format, either on the screen or on a page, to the participants so they can follow along. So in that sense, you can treat it very much as a guided reading experience, to improve vocabulary and to improve reading speed. So I do share the textual material as well. So you're definitely getting that eye gaze thing going on. Yeah.
Yeah, and people can, you know, zone into that, tune into that line that really engages them and
yes,
you know, keep rereading it and visualizing it. Yeah. I was just wondering about the aspect, because of course we have auditory and visual learners as well.
Yes.
That would gravitate.
And that helps with the discussion, right? Because very often I find that people want to go back into the text and pull out a particular line. Where is that line, right? And they'll say, I have a comment about this, but I've got to go find that line. That to me is what's really exciting, is that for a literacy learner, that's an additional skill, right? Is the seeking and scanning, you know, going back over the material to try and find what it was that's, when you heard it, it, you know, inspired you. So yeah, there are lots of embedded skills in literacy, or sorry, bibliotherapy.
So how does a program or organization, how do they explore bibliotherapy with their clients?
So I've been doing training, like certainly I've been training and mentoring different agencies or groups across Ontario for the last 4 years. And I'm always amenable to working with new groups and community members to try and develop their own models. You know, it can be as simple as just looking up or asking for some advice on a couple of key informant documents. There's some foundation documents that are pretty helpful. So you can read, you can read your way to bibliotherapy. You can work with an agency like mine to develop a model and deliver a model. The thing that I find really interesting is that the most important skills of being a bibliotherapy facilitator aren't necessarily that you have like this extensive training and education background in this particular model, because it doesn't exist, frankly. Is that you're an expressive, enthusiastic reader, and you're an avid, and you can source out interesting content. That's it. Those are the only skills you really need to be good at. This is to be a good reader, an expressive reader, and to know where to find content that's going to spark discussions. And again, we're trying to build a little community. There are not many people who do bibliotherapy, but I work with three other people across Ontario who are doing it in different contexts. And, you know, we're trying to create a little learning lab kind of approach. So yeah, we welcome all comers. And I personally am so excited about this model, and I'm so invested in it that I will take on anyone as a partner to sort of massage it and see if we can make it work in other areas.
Mm. And so I heard you say before that you have been delivering virtually because of COVID. I know before, I believe that you delivered in person.
I did.
What might delivery look like post COVID? Like, are you going to continue with like a blend, or what yes. kind of works the best?
Yeah, it's interesting. So we're totally going to keep up with the online, and I'll tell you why, because the most amazing thing happened with my Ajax Public Library group. So I've been partnering with Ajax Public Library for the better part of a year to deliver online through their online program, their service programs. And we have people from as far away as Philadelphia signing into that Monday wow. night session. So we have two participants in Philadelphia. I have people from all across Ontario, from downtown Toronto, from the Muskokas. So the online has been a real benefit because we can draw in people who, you know, don't live close together, but we want to share, like we've formed a little community and we want to continue sharing, right? So yeah, online is going to stay. I'm interested in experimenting with hybrid. I don't know how that would work yet. I'm still trying to figure it out, but you know, gradually I'm going to be doing more in-person stuff, and I'm trying to figure out whether there's a way of me being present with both an online and an in-person group. So stay tuned for more news on that. It's just it's all just a crazy experiment right now, right? So, but it's interesting because I was not a big fan of online learning. Anyone who knows me knows I'm pretty old school. I use a fountain pen and I have a record player that tells you everything you need to know about my digital acuity here.
Record players are cool, even with yes. like they're very cool. You've
yeah, it took a long time for them to get cool again. I have to tell yeah. you, but you know, yeah, I think that I was really resistant at first to introducing this as an online program, but because of the fact that we've been able to reach people in jurisdictions that I'd never, you know, geographic areas I'd never been able to have connected with. I've been pretty psyched about how that's worked. I've been pretty pleased with the feedback. So yeah, that was a pleasant surprise for me.
There's a safety to the online as well that I'd be interesting to know if people are more willing to be more vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because they're yeah. in their own home.
Yeah, maybe.
As you know, we explore.
Yeah, I'll be keeping an eye on that. That's a good point. I mean, we had such good luck and good fortune with the groups that we ran in person. We worked with Brain Injuries Association and did it with people with short and long-term memory loss. That was a wildly successful group. Our literacy group was very successful. Our library groups have been, you know, I work with an architectural firm who has a very extensive and complicated professional development system for their staff. And this is now one of their electives, and they're like addicted to it. I mean, I run a wait list for that group because they're so keen. So I love the fact that this works with anybody, right? Like right. anybody from any background. And it's all the same content. It's not like I pull special content for groups of different education level. They're all having the same and interesting conversations that are just different every single time.
It's the magic. It's the magic of the words, right?
Yeah.
What's interesting, Ashley, I'm just reflecting on our conversation we just had about gamification and how that is also sort of a non-traditional way with confidence building Not taking things at your own time, learning new, reflecting on your own soft skills and the emotional component, the motivational aspects. Ashley, did you have another question?
I don't. I think no. We're on to the last.
I thought so too. I wanted to ask, because you raised it about success, before I go on to my final two questions, I think my final two, there could be more, is when you say that those programs that you ran were successful, how do you define success with this kind of a program? Does it relate to the audience, or so the outcomes would be different?
Yeah. So it's kind of twofold at this point, Gay. Like, on one hand, I've been partnering with Ontario Tech University to sort of generate as much research as we can. So we have had a fairly robust evaluation methodology attached to bibliotherapy. There are pre and post surveys that take place with most of the groups, or ongoing key informant interviews or debriefing. So we evaluate as we go. Through a couple of different mechanisms, because we're trying to develop and contribute to a research culture. There's not a lot of bibliotherapy going on in Canada. There's only been really one formative paper written in Canada about bibliotherapy. There's been a PhD dissertation. So we're trying to contribute more. So obviously evaluation is a big part of that. We're actually now in the process of doing yet another peer-reviewed paper on specifically evaluation and impact. So that's, we've just completed a whole range of, we've had a professor who's in a TA who've gone through key informant interviews with participants over the last year. And we're culminating that information, and we'll present it at a conference in another year. So there's definitely that academic bent to it. Like, we're very keen to contribute to research culture. The flip side is another key success indicator is retention. So to me, it's like, how many people are in these sessions? Are these sessions running wait lists? And do we have the same participants kind of returning? And no matter what the group is, we've seen all those things. We see wait lists. We see significant numbers of returning participants. The numbers for all of the groups are optimal. So the library groups are on a little on the smaller side, but we're still talking 7 to 10 individuals in each session. Ontario Works has been, that session has been anywhere from between 10 and 20 people per session. And Turner Fletcher Architects has been usually in excess of 20 people, 20 to 30 people a session. These are well attended sessions. Those are high thresholds for this model. There are a lot of people to be corralling during the course of a facilitation. And again, we see the same people coming time and time again. I get a lot of testimonials too. I've had a lot of people who've reached out to me and said, you know, I love this. It's an important part of the work that I, you know, in the case of the architectural firm, I've had one of the partners reach out and say, this is now a cornerstone of our professional development delivery, which is a big deal, right? Because these people do not have time to waste on ineffectual models of connectedness amongst their staff. With social services, this has developed into a partnership that has lasted. We're now on our 57th week of delivery. We've done this all through the pandemic since last year. And this, I've trained an OW facilitator who's now a partner and does a facilitation alongside me. So, you know, those are all sort of in the background in terms of how we're monitoring success. And I think it's also the enthusiasm of the facilitators. So I've trained lots of facilitators who are, you know, some people are doing a little bit of it. Some people have integrated into other aspects of their work. And across the board, the facilitators report that they get a sense of well-being. So to me, that's the hallmark of something really special and effective. Right. Because if the facilitators themselves get a huge benefit, almost as high an impact as the participants, you have to believe that there's something really positive and good.
Yeah, happening. You're onto something here.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I love it. You know, like, this has been like a game changer in terms of just my own, like, especially during the pandemic, just my own mental health. Like, this is my lifesaver. This has been my special go-to moment throughout the pandemic.
This has been your connecting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've met some really great people and heard some amazing conversations.
I imagine. I'm thinking about this as a team building approach.
Yes,
it works in a staff group or with a number of volunteers, how that could build long-lasting trust and respect.
Yeah, I've advocated the use of it as an icebreaker. So you can do, you don't have to do it in, like, the model is very pliable.
Right.
You can do it for an hour and a half. You can do it for 15 minutes. You can do a 15-minute poetry break and use a piece of poetry to as an icebreaker, as a team-building exercise.
As a break.
So it's very portable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very flexible. That's helpful to know. Okay. I have a couple of questions here. And they are very vague, and they are vague for a reason. When we have been doing this series, we have a number of different questions we've prepared and asked the folks we've spoken with. And they're quite different, the questions we typically ask. But these final two questions have been consistent among everyone that we have asked. And here they are. They're brief, but they're vague, purposely. So what is the system doing well? And what could the system do better, Janine?
Interesting. So is it, why is the system doing well? Or
what
is the system
doing?
What is the
system doing well, and what could the system do better?
So I think what's been doing really well is just this sense of amplifying the importance of poetry in people's lives. I think to me that's a really important takeaway, and building connected communities. So that's an area where I feel like, you know, we're really making some inroads with just developing this sense of connectedness and decreasing people's sense of social isolation, especially during the pandemic. And what also has really worked well is just having people reflect on what's important to them through discussion about literature. You know, I hear a lot of people talking about the importance of nature, the importance of resilience, the importance of patience or hope, or, you know, or learning from failure even. So that aspect is doing well. And I think those people who are expressed, who are exposed to it, respond to it. And that's been a success. Where we need to, you know, where we need to build is, it's just capacity. Right now, I'm the only person doing it in my region, with the exception of a co-facilitator at Ontario Works. I don't have a lot of resources or support for this. I've been able to cobble together a little bit of funding each year to support bibliotherapy, but the need has probably outstripped the availability of funds. So it's a bit of an odd duck to try to jam into an existing funding mechanism. It isn't necessarily a fundable activity through our conventional literacy funding pot, and has required quite a bit of work at trying to find ways of supporting it. So that's always the conundrum is, you know, with limited resources, with limited facilitators, with limited opportunity, like, how do we expand the model exponentially to other areas, to other constituents? So that's something that we definitely need to work on.
Mm-hmm. Especially given the profound impact for people. Those wouldn't be my final questions.
Good.
I was wondering, when working with low-level literacy learners, as you have, has one of the indicators been, perhaps a success indicator, that they are then more likely to pursue other poetry or other reading opportunities?
I believe so. I mean, we didn't look at that specifically because it was during a pilot phase. And so we weren't looking at necessarily that little hub of learners, but more of a global program suitability approach. But I believe, yes, that those learners walked away feeling like they'd like more of the same. They responded very well to poetry, better than I had anticipated. And they seemed to be enthusiastic to continue having it. So we ran six sessions with them. And it seemed like the poetry was like a big draw for these individuals. They certainly were excited to tackle new poetry. And what was beautiful was there was no filter, right? Like, they didn't like it. They didn't like it. And that's one of the beautiful, and that's the nice thing about bibliotherapy is it's nothing personal. I didn't write the poem. If you don't like it, that's okay. As a facilitator, I'm just interested in what kind of conversations we can have. So to be able to sort of approach them with the idea that there's poetry that's suitable for you, no matter who you are, where you sit in this world, And we were very careful about selecting poetry that might appeal to this particular group of low-level learners, because they were all, you know, they all came from manufacturing. They weren't your conventional poetry readers. In this particular group, they were also all men. So we were very careful about what we selected to make sure that that poetry really was going to, you know, it was going to resonate with them. Mm-hmm. It was by poets that they could relate to, who had backgrounds and histories that we could say, hey, here's a guy who wrote poetry. He was a male man for 40 years. You know, he wrote about what life was like in Los Angeles and was pretty gritty. And he's got some things to say that he probably can relate to. And yes, that resonated. So I feel like for literacy learners, and I'm still negotiating another session with more literacy learners. And this is some of the question. These are some of the questions that we have are, can we start using this as an instructional model where we're actually enhancing and tracking mm-hmm. whether they're doing vocabulary building, whether they're enhancing their reading ability through this model. So I've been negotiating with the program to see if we can start to pick away at this and really mm-hmm. look at whether there's a learning, a specific learning benefit for these particular individuals.
So interesting.
Yeah, it's great fun.
This mm-hmm. topic is awesome. And you can hear when you speak, this is your passion project. Like this Huge. Is, yeah, it,
yeah.
It so much love.
Yeah, it, like I love reading, right? Like, I mean, for me, reading has been like, reading is a thing. Like that's like the, if I have downtime, I'm reading a book. And being someone who's always been so kind of passionately attached to reading, this program has just been a really good natural fit, right? Because I get excited about what I'm reading and I want to share it with people. And I feel like it doesn't really matter what your background is. There's stuff out there that's really just going to, you know, you're going to flip your lid over it, right? You're going to get totally excited because someone's speaking what's going on in your head, and that, you know, or they write something and you go, that's my lived experience. Or, you know, that isn't my lived experience, but man, does that make me passionate about wanting to share a thought or an impression or a memory. And, you know, that's great. And it's so applicable to so many settings where people need comfort, right? So I've done sessions with hospice, you know, with recent bereavement groups. So these are individuals who've come to hospice who are recently bereaved of a loved one and are coping with the bereavement process and the grief process. And we've used bibliotherapy with them, you know, to help them lessen the load, right? Emotionally, just to take a bit of a nature break. So we don't talk about grief. I don't pull grief content for that. I'm pulling stuff on nature or happiness or on, you know, on topics that, you know, are going to give them some space mentally to contemplate something other than their grief for a few moments. And those sessions have been very successful for that reason, because mm-hmm. people come away going, you know, I needed that. I needed my Emily Dickinson, you know, that's what I needed today. I needed that poem about, you know, about hope that, you know, or mm-hmm. I needed that just that little brief piece of prose that was going to just, you know, just make me feel connected with nature for a moment. So yeah, it's so much, you know, there's just so much benefit there in all ways. And I just am so enthusiastic to keep experimenting with it and sharing it.
Well, your enthusiasm is definitely contagious. And I think, I think it will be like that for many of our listeners. And I just love the universal aspect. You've said it several times. Bibliotherapy just can reach so many different people. And I think it can reach everyone in one way or another. So we will post sure. A link in our show notes on yes. how to reach Linder and the information yes. about bibliotherapy. Janine, thank you so much for being with us. Listeners, we are looking for your help to create content for a fun show airing in the new year. We want to know what skills are obsolete and just aren't necessary anymore for employment, learning, and life. These are skills that maybe were essential to learn in the past, things like faxing or taking a phone message. We want to hear your stories, your examples, your suggestions. So click the link in the show notes and share your feedback. And everyone who contributes and lives in Ontario will be entered to win a $50 gift card through random draw. Thanks for listening, listener. We look forward to getting connected with you next time.